Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. I give a shit. I give a shit. It's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day. Fuck that shit. You know what? I just want to let you know that this is what I posted today for Valentine's Day for all you guys, or all you humans out there who are being flogged with Valentine's Day that may not be relevant in your particular case. I hand-sewed, hand-made this very meticulous pillow that said, Valentine's Day is just another way of society saying fuck you to people like me. So I made that when I was single, and I used to, you know, being single is actually great for art making and us. But I want you to know that, like, I really get it. And even if you do are in a relationship, if it's more than 6 months, people are always fucking disappointed by Valentine's Day. I don't care who you are. Let's be real, all right? Married, single, whatever. I have one friend who's going out on like a first date. It's probably going to be exciting for her, and that's it. That's all I'm saying. So anyway, I have a really special guest today. His name is Ralph Lear, and he was brought here, or I got to meet him through his a brand manager, Megan Davenport, who I met in person, and she listened to one of our shows, Amy Hill, because she knows she worked with Amy, and she decided she got Lear to come here today, which I am really, really thrilled. One of the things about Quoted Magazine that is so, here's why I'm thrilled. First of all, before I met Megan Ralph.
Yes.
I got nervous.
Well,
I got
it's because I'm Norwegian. That's
I got nervous there. So Ralph, I'm always afraid I'm going to forget names. So anyway, before I met them, I was totally blown away by their magazine. It's really Ralph's magazine. He's the founder of it. And for a lot of reasons, conceptually, but design-wise too, the execution is spectacular. It's really like a coffee table book more than even a magazine. I don't just the design, the typography, the photography. I mean, you just don't see this kind of thing anymore. So it's really, really, I can genuinely say, even if I had never met Ralph or Megan, that I was blown away by the magazine. So I am really, really, really honored to have them here, frankly.
Thank you.
And yeah, so here's a tease. Before we get started, I have to do the rest of my flogging here or whatever. So I want you to stay tuned because this is going to be really great. And when I was doing the research on Rolf, I found out that he grew up in Norway on a farm that was a mental institution with 15 actual patients, right?
That's right.
And I did not know that till today. So this is fascinating shit, man. And now he's somebody that goes out there, and his magazine is about finding the most diverse. What did you guys say? You said the most you celebrate diversity and you contribute to tolerance. So somehow, Rolf has taken that initial life being around these crazy, weird, you know, mental patients. And I think that it really sparked his fascination with human nature and the ability of what humans are capable of and all this other amazing shit. So fucking stick around, okay? This is going to be great. Let me just get my housekeeping over with. I've got two really great things that I want to tell you about. One is this really fabulous program. It's called Outside the Lines, and it's a monthly art program for adults, okay? And holy fucking shit, it was yesterday. Oh my God! Can you believe this? This is really stupid. Do you guys still want to be on the show? Look, this could be potential.
We're leaving.
Bye. That's potentially embarrassing. But anyway, you know what? I think this is an ongoing program, and I think it's a monthly program. So, like, let's just finish with that. And it takes place every month at the Bushwick Library Auditorium. And it's for artists who are looking to create and connect with other artists in a relaxed setting to do crafts and art projects. And you can bring, and it's just a great brand new art making program just for adults at the Brooklyn Public Library. I'm going to give you a phone number and then you can just fucking figure it out yourself. All right. 718-602-1348. That's 718-602-1348. I'll post it on my Facebook page if you somehow get lost and can't find it. And I also have a song I want to play. Maybe we'll save us to the half an hour, huh? Because I want to get started. But Gift Shop, which is a great band that was on the Roden Hour this week, is having their record release, or whatever you call it. What do you guys call it? EPs? At Coney Island Baby, which is a really awesome place in 169 Avenue A. And that's at 8 p.m. on February 16th. And it's $10. But they're a really, really awesome band and really great people. And they were on the Roden Hour this week, which so you should listen to them and check them out. And I'm going to be playing their song today at some point. But I just want to get into this conversation, okay? Because let's do this. So, okay, Rolf.
Yes.
Hi, first Lisa. Of all, Rolf and Megan. Rolf is from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And he has, how long have you lived here?
Well, it's my third year now.
Did you learn English in school when you were growing up?
I did,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so his English he says it's a little questionable. So,
well, if I have drinks, it gets a lot uh-huh. better. But
well, we're not drinking.
No, we're not.
I should drink. A lot of people do drink on their shows, but this is 2 p.m, and it would be a really dark hole to go
I agree.
Down. So that's partly why Megan is here, but because Megan's going to, she's the brand manager. She's going to make sure that Rolf doesn't fuck up. And if he does, she's going to be there.
Yeah, I'm going to clean it all up.
And say exactly what he really meant to say.
Right? Of course.
It's so great that he's Norwegian, so you can just use it. Well, he didn't really mean to say that.
No.
Yeah, he meant what he meant was that. So we got them both here, but we're going to really focus on Rolf. I also want to tell you, Rolf is really hot.
Oh,
wow.
You
think so, Megan?
Thank you.
People think he's
absolutely
really
attractive. And yeah, I get told a lot that
people are after Rolf.
They like Rolf.
Do they ask if he's single a lot?
The women ask if he's single a lot, yes.
The women do.
Yes.
Well, you know, I think everybody would think Rolf's hot. The thing is about Rolf, you're not here, so I got to tell you. He's really hot. He's also totally into this project. I mean, you know, I have a brief interview with all my guests before I get on the show. And this guy, this is a really, really, I mean, what did we say? Did I say that there's 2.3 million travelers? And it's in 4 airlines and airport lounges, select hotel in New York City and lifestyle destinations. So, I mean, people are digging this, but it is really a passion project that, you know, sometimes, folks, you do run across somebody who has a passion project that other people are really excited about. Okay, this is our proof here. So I thought, when I first started out today doing my research, I thought that we were going to really talk about the magazine. But when I hit on the fact that Rolf grew up in Norway in a mental in a farm with that had mental patients, we're just going down that road. I'm thrilled to be doing that. And I think that, so the magazine every month or whenever it comes out, it's 10 interviews of different New Yorkers that Rolf curates, right?
This is exactly what we're doing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what interests you? What interests you about New York in particular? What interests you about the people that you've, you know, talked to?
Yeah, I mean, Norway, for those who doesn't know too much about Norway, it is a very wealthy country. And so we can be very happy about that. But then there's also something very homogeneous about Norwegians. So it has a lack of creativity. It has a lack of innovation. And I sometimes think it lacks a little bit of passion and drive.
It's fucking boring, like the suburbs in America. That's
fucking
what you're saying.
Fucking boring.
Right? Have you been there, Megan?
I haven't been there, no.
Okay.
And so, you know, first time that I came to visit New York, it's something that just hits you when you get here with the diversity of people and the energy that's here. It's a little bit of a cliche to say, but I think cliches are made for a reason, and that is why I fell in love with New York in the beginning and was interested in exploring more, like, what is this whole shebang about New York and being a New Yorker? What is it really?
So New Yorkers are really, so you're a really well-traveled guy. You've been to, you know, We agreed before we got on here that you are a world traveler. We've gone over this. You are world traveled.
Yeah.
But New York, really, out of all the places you've been, you think the people here are particularly unique.
Mm-hmm. And it's good that you say people, because I mean, for comfort, for whatever other things you're traveling for, New York is a fucking boring, nasty place.
It's horrible. No,
it's horrible. But
that's why the people are great, right?
Exactly. Like, the people is what draw me here. There's Barcelona, Copenhagen. There's other cities around the world that I really dig for other reasons. But New York particularly is for the people itself.
And what catches your mind about a particular person? Like, what kinds of things?
Oh, say that question again. This is where my Norwegian gets a little bit... yeah, come on.
Maybe my English. I don't know. So why do you choose a particular person?
Like, what element?
Yeah. Well, you're treating me like I'm a retard, huh?
No, not yet. Oh, honey, we can get much further down that road.
Oh, wow. Okay,
no,
I can't wait.
No, you haven't seen anything yet. No, we're still being respectful here.
Well, I mean, for the magazine, it is all about trying to embrace as much of the diversity as possible. And diversity is on so many levels and parameters. It's about geography. It's about profession, ethnicity. It's about sexual orientation. It's about, you know, all of these things.
Diversity. Okay, so let me ask you this. Do you think growing up on that farm with the mental people and like being around freaks all the time is what you kind of like about New Yorkers, that kind of feel comfortable to you, like the like the people you grew up with?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, growing up on a mental institution made me very early on tolerant to different ways of thinking. And
well,
yeah.
I was going to say, I think it's a lot more than tolerance. I think you have a connection. I think you have an emotional, to me, it sounds like you have an emotional connection to these people, that there's some kind of love or compassion or identification with weirdos.
Yeah, I mean, I can get really angry if the society is trying to define what's normal and not normal. I think there's both normal and unnormal in every single person. So it's more seeing the person that's there and listening to what they are and their story. I like to be around freaks and I like to be around
normal.
Any kind of people.
Yeah. So if I was gonna judge you superficially, I would say like you seem like really normal to me. But you know what I mean. Besides the fact that you're a foreigner,
yeah.
But do you think that's true, Megan? Do people view Rolf as a normal guy?
At first glance, yes.
Yeah?
I would say so.
And
yeah.
And you look like you're disappointed about that, Rolf.
Nah, I'm not disappointed. I understand that I'm perceived as someone that looks normal, but I mean, that's also because, I don't know, I'm kind of privileged, I guess, to be seen as normal sometimes.
Yeah.
Because then you can surprise people by showing other sides of yourself.
Right. And you can get into private parties easily.
Definitely. Exactly. There's
and,
easy
you know,
access.
I was going to say that, you know, you have an incredibly successful passion project. And I think that also deserves a certain amount. That probably elicits being taken seriously from people that meet you, especially through the work you do.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that it's part of it. That your actual achievements.
Yeah. Yeah.
People put that in the category of normal for some reason if you've achieved a lot. And I don't get that either. So I want to hear the story. I want to hear like how you grew up and who your parents were and tell us, make us understand the farm situation.
All right. So we got to go outside in the suburbs, of course. It's a farm. And it's where 15, 16 people, it depends on like the time of the year because people come and go, of course, different diagnoses, they get treatment and then they leave if they're fresh enough to leave. We grew up there, me and my sister and my two parents. It was a very traditional family in that sense. But what was different from any other growing up situation is that we also shared any kind of meal or holiday with then all the patients that lived on the farm.
So did you eat with them every single day?
Yeah, I mean, especially for dinner and for like a meal later on, afternoon meal. When it was Christmas, we would celebrate Christmas with them or, you know, so it was all
alcohol?
One household.
I just had to ask that.
Well, some of them could handle alcohol, some couldn't. And, you know, we would we would have their alcohol stored somewhere and they would come and ask, can we have a drink? Because they needed to be limited, you know, with how many drinks they were allowed to.
So what did your parents do? Like, how did they get into that business?
This is something that has been running in the family for 100 years or a little bit more because they saw that having patients living on a farm was a better treatment than having them in public institutions because
Absolutely.
They were, you know, part of farm work, part of household work, and just getting small assignments that they could master. So my mother was the one who was inheriting the whole farm situation. Well, and then she grew into that. I mean, she also grew up the same way that I did, and you get kind of environmentally damaged or environmentally blessed. I guess that's two sides of the same
occupational
story.
Therapy, we call that in America, and that's how we used to treat all our mental patients here until we got drugs and sent them out in the world. And it's really, occupational therapy is a meditation, and it's really like a usefulness. I do think that is actually the best way to treat mentally. I am all for that.
Yeah.
It is really good. And it's, you know, it's not practical in our world here. But so do your parents have any training or how'd your dad get hooked into this?
Well, he was the unlucky one who were just falling in love with my mom and he just had to follow on to take this farm.
Did your mom have training? Are you guys?
Yeah. So she is a psychiatrical what is it called? Nurse. Yeah, psychiatrical nurse. And my dad is in economics. He's trained in economy. So, you know, the combination of those two makes it pretty,
practical.
Yeah.
Is it, where did the patients come from? Is it a government thing?
Yeah, the government is. Because if they can't be in any public treatment, then the government would buy. So it's a private practice kind of situation.
Right.
But then again, you know, so it's not like the family of the patients would have to pay money for them to be there.
Right.
It's the government who's taking care of that because that's also one of the good things about the democracy of Norway.
Healthcare.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck that shit, man. That's great.
And I do want to say that, you know, when we were living together, like the patients and me and my sister, I didn't see them as patients. They were more like an extended family. And also the way that I then were treating them was more like friends instead of, you know, being someone that saw them as something strange or weird or, you know, fucked up. And I think that also made the whole situation very kind of nice. And I see it now in perspective, also living here, that it's really a unique way of treating people.
Oh, it's great. You saw it. I haven't seen it up close, but you have, and you think that is a really compassionate way to treat people.
Yeah.
Does that like make you sad and frustrated when you see how people are treated here, mentally ill people, or you see homeless people? Is it Is that hard for you? Because you know you've seen it?
Well, it's not hard on an everyday basis.
Because you got to live with
it. Yeah. So I gotten used to it. And I mean, back to being... having traveled quite a bit,
yeah.
like the situation around the world, it
yeah,
is
right.
pretty brutal out there. So you can't go around and be sad for everyone. You can do the little things when you have something to give or you have time to give or just, you know, see people in the eye and say hello.
Right.
Because I think a lot of people think that they need to give money. I think sometimes you can just look them in the eyes and say, you know, have a nice day.
It's really respect, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
Acknowledgement and respect. So did you have the infrastructure at the farm? Was it, did you have like other people? Was it just your parents running this or did you have other experts or people working there? Did you have a staff living there or people came in? How did that work?
Yeah. So there is a staff connected to the whole farm situation for, you know, 16 patients. It's impossible for two people to take care of so many people. So yeah, there's a staff and there still is. I mean, now my sister has taken over the whole business and it's a staff of five people. Then there's doctors and psychiatrists who's also connected.
But they don't all live there.
Oh no, they don't live there.
The staff
doesn't live
there. They come and work.
Yeah, yeah.
Were they like family to you too, or?
Yeah, some of them, you know, some of the older women who worked there since I was a baby boy. And then when I grew up with them in a way. And they would bake cookies and, you know, give.
But you didn't get to know them the way you got to know your.
No.
It was different. They had a different, they had more boundaries, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So how would somebody, what kind of mental illness or what were the criteria that they would wind up with your family?
It was a lot of diverse clientele. So it's schizophrenia, manic depressive, bipolar, anxiety, strong anxiety. Nowadays, it's more like drug related. So it's drug combined with something else or a drug that triggers something. So it was a good mix of people and situations.
So were a lot of the people, some of the people weren't like, reality, they weren't reality based people. Were most of them not reality based or just a few?
I would say it was like half and half.
Speaks English,
you know,
very well, by the way.
Oh, thank
Sorry,
you. Thank you. You're looking
Go
at
ahead.
Megan like I'm not here, but thank you. You know, it was, you know, some of them didn't even have a foot in reality and would come up to me as a little boy and tell me that he was just in a meeting with the king in his underwear. And then it was kind of like that. That was just a normal situation and you had to talk to them about that, but it's the same time try and get them back to reality a little bit. Or some were also stuck in childhoods and would be singing, you know, childhood songs even though they were 45 years old and doing those movements around like some kind of gestures that they had learned at childhood. So you had those and then you had those that were there they could have actual conversations with. So it was a mix.
Well, how did your parents explain this all to you? What was the what was their attitude as far as like your role as their children?
Of course, they didn't have to explain anything because I grew up with this.
Right.
But I mean, when I, as a kid, of course, I didn't understand all the limits. So I could play around in the house and do things that maybe weren't that thoughtful, like, you know, building a castle with all the interior and then blocking the common space for all the patients, like those kind of things that I didn't think about. And then, of course, my parents had to correct me and say, you know, this is a space for everyone and you got to, you know, clean this space now.
Right.
It was more that way that they...
More about being polite.
Yeah.
Or considerate.
Yeah.
But were there any, like, I mean, a lot of parents, like, if somebody's coming, talking to you about stuff that's not real, like, how did they handle the schizophrenics with you? How did they... Or was it just that you instinctually kind of knew and you were cool with it?
Well, so, I was... cool with it, but there was one situation that I do remember today, and that was a guy that he was maybe the most famous Norwegian band called Aha, and they have on Me.
You know,
he was mailing with Morten Harket, which is the lead singer.
Oh, wow.
So they would be like mailing back and forth, not like today's internet mailing, by shipping
letters.
Yes, letters.
Letter writing.
And then one day he asked me, this patient, to come up to his room because he had something he wanted to show me that he had gotten from Morten Harket. So I came up to his room and then he was sitting with his back towards me. I turned around and he was sitting there with his penis in his hand. You know, that kind of situation is something that's not okay, and something where my parents had to go in and talk to me about what had happened, and also to him, because it was it didn't feel dangerous because I knew him, but it was just very weird.
How old were you?
8, 9, something. Yeah.
Did it feel frightening in any way?
No, not frightening. I was just surprised, and I run down and I told my parents what had happened.
Right away, you felt comfortable doing that, which is a good sign. And how did they handle it?
Well, they talked to him about
Did they go like, "Oh, I'm like"? They weren't like my mother going, "Oh my God."
They were just
cool about it.
This is part of the package. If you are growing up in a place like that, it will be situations that are different. So it wasn't feel like it wasn't anything threatening.
Yeah, so
it was just
cool
another unnormal situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
You know what's so fascinating to me right now, thinking about it, is that your mother grew up in the same situation, so she actually has a really healthy, or let's say, tolerant is a word, but also just an innate sense. I'm guessing it sounds like she has a real innate sense of how to deal with these people, and she was able to transfer that on to you in a way without like making...
Yeah.
Like she knew how to manage her kids because she knew what it was like for her.
Of course, yeah. No, I think you're right.
And do you ever think about taking over the farm or having, you don't have an interest? What about your sister?
Yeah, well, she's now the one who's running it. So my parents just were retiring like last summer. So my sister is the one who is now taking it, making it her own, modernizing it a little bit, and then going to move on in the same soul that it always has been.
Are you happy about that though?
Yeah. And I love coming back there just to visit, and also to get my fingers or foot or whatever you say in English to be put more down to real needs and see what real people...
The perspective. Like getting that perspective.
Yeah, because here in New York, you sometimes forget about real needs and real... Not real people, because we're all real people. But we're all also very high up in Maslow's need pyramids, where we want to accomplish things.
Yeah, we've got passion projects, for God's sakes. We're not looking for food. We got fucking passion projects. And don't forget that, you idiots who are working on your art or whatever. It is a privilege because you got enough food. You can think about that shit. Okay, I'm just going to do my station ID here. Because I want to remind people that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and it's Dr. Lisa Give a Shit. I'm here having this fascinating conversation with Rolf Lear, who is the founder of Quoted Magazine. That's quotedmagazine.com Instagram or social media @quoted_magazine. And we're talking about him growing up on a farm with mental patients. Fascinating. So stick around. But I just want to tell you that, this is actually a really important time for radio because we're in a shitstorm out there, and we need to support nonprofits, and we need to support radio, and we need to support free speech. So go to our website, radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate, and give us a Valentine's Day present, just a small one. But you know what? If you do that, it'll be like really good karma. And no matter how shitty Because everyone secretly is afraid of having a shitty Valentine's Day. It will make it good because you will have done something worthwhile and you can feel good about yourself. That's my advice. Let's see. I am a good shrink.
Word.
Fake shrink. So I want to hear like some stories. I want to hear, Rolf, I want to hear it dimensionalized, what it was like at the farm. Can you like give us like some description of maybe a dinner or what it was? Let me ask you one more question. Did you have perspective on how it's sounding so weird? I'm going to say weird. Did you have perspective on that? Like, did you go to like at school? Was it different? What was it like at school?
Well, I mean, it was different to take friends to the farm because that's when I really understood the special situation that we grew up in. Mm-hmm. Because they would, of course, have a lot of questions and some of them would be scared because these people were
right.
acting differently. Yeah, I mean, that's how I got the perspective and understood really what I was part of.
Oh, from other people visiting you. Were
yeah.
they, what was it? Did people at school look at you funny because of it or did
no.
it not matter?
No, more with curiosity,
they
I guess.
Were, they thought you were cool. Oh, it's probably a coolness factor. What do you think, Megan? They weren't, it wasn't, but you know, it's so weird. You know what's so weird about you, Rolf? Your existence is your being, is that like, you're like this, at least on a superficial level, personally, like very normal person, but you are like, you are one with the crazy people. And so it's almost like you're a representative of the crazy people. You know what I mean? Like you're almost like their ambassador in
yeah,
a way.
Well,
do you
take
feel
that
like
as a compliment.
That?
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you, Megan?
Oh, I totally get it.
Does
yeah.
he play like, that role?
Kind of like a spokesperson.
Yeah, for the crazy
well,
people.
Well, he does. We do say we're democratizing the voice of New York. So I suppose that kind of goes
true.
With that, you know?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, we need you desperately.
Well, thank you.
So you got that perspective. Did anybody's parents not want their kids coming to your place or
nah they
no,
knew you know
knew
I came from a very small school. We were 8 people in my class, you know, that's the situation
oh,
in Norway. So all the parents knew each other, they knew what was happening at the farm, and so they would actually send their kids there so we could all hang out and go horseback riding or whatever.
Did you have horses and animals?
Yeah,
and
that was
like
part
that?
Of the whole
oh,
you know
man.
Therapy thing was having animals at the farm. So it was
care
a,
of them.
Yeah, definitely.
So what was like, describe some of the scenarios. I mm-hmm. keep asking that, but I'm dying to hear, like, tell us like a dinner or anything,
okay.
what comes to mind.
Yeah. Pick and choose. So I'll take, you know, like typically a Christmas dinner where we all were sitting together on a long table. So it would be like 24 to 30 people of us because it would be all the patients. Then it would be my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother's side of the family as well. Every year, we were almost betting for how long the Christmas dinner was going to be before some of the patients would burp, because that is how fast they are eating or the were eating.
Crazy people eat faster?
Well, at least the crazy people that were living at my farm or our farm. So
my husband's a really fast eater.
Well, maybe he's mentally ill.
Well, he's married to me. I mean, come on.
No, and then, you know, it would almost be like a comical thing because Christmas dinner, it is great food and it was their favorite meal of the year. So it would usually take like 15 minutes. And normally, at least in Norway, I don't know about here, but you sit and you have your Christmas dinner for a couple of hours. But then after 15 minutes, the whole meal would be done. And then all the, like most of the patients would be like burping or farting or doing something to acknowledge that this was a good meal and now I'm done.
That's hilarious. And so how did your family, was that just normal or did you guys laugh about it?
Yes,
or
were
you...
then we were laughing hard because this was something that happened every year. And as I said, like we would almost like go in before the Christmas dinner and see like, are we able to sit for 20 minutes this year? Or how long do you think it's going to take before everyone is done and farting and burping? So it's, you know, that kind of
That's
situation.
That's awesome. And what was like a normal dinner, like, you know, like during the week? What was normal dinner like there?
I mean,
did
normal
you eat
dinner,
with the patients every night or?
Well, we were, So it's separated with a kitchen where me and my mom and dad and sister, we would have dinner, but with an open solution so that the patients would sit for in their own little common space.
Their own space.
And then we would eat at the same time. Mm-hmm. And if they needed anything, then we would be there. They could just shout out whatever.
So you guys weren't all, you had your separate family. Not completely separate, but more mostly separate.
Yeah, it's very blurred line because it wasn't like separated by a door and the wall. Mm-hmm. It was more like separated by, let's say, like a half a wall.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
like a small. So was there ever were there any patients that you particularly got close to or that you feel like you grew up with or?
Yeah. I mean, there's
one of
someone
them?
That's still alive and she has now been living at the farm for 35 years and is the only one that
practically your whole life
is she has Down's syndrome. So she is belonging to, you know, she was born with this.
Right.
But she is really well mixed with everyone else there. And she has for so many years been the queen of the farm. So she's been treated differently. And the other ones have been taking care of her in a very, like, in a very nice, familiar way, if you can say it that way. And she was someone that always were, she calls me still her little boy. Hug, and I when I get home, I lift her up, I take her around the
around
what is it called?
The waist,
and I lift her up and I swirl her around, and then we hug each other, and then she calls me, "Oh, little boy, you're home."
Oh my god. Oh, I know.
That's
I know. Megan's wiping her eyes.
Too much.
Yeah, she's very, and
she's a really special person.
She is very special. And now she's starting to, you know, get a little bit older, of course,
right.
And she needs more caretaking.
Mm.
So it's it's nice as long as she's here to be able to go back and, you know, meet her again and again.
Right. So do you think, is she a little more vulnerable because she has like, she has a serious genetic learning, really developmental thing. Is she a little less functional than some of the other?
Is
she like the vulnerable one there?
But she's also been the one who is mostly eager to help. So with any kind of meal, with any kind of cleaning up, getting things from the basement, you know, because we need big storage rooms. So getting things from the basement, like milk and juice, and she would be like, "Yeah, I'll do that." And she would put on the coffee and she would serve people. Now she does less. But one of the things that she is still doing is every Christmas Eve at 7 a.m. in the morning, her and I meet downstairs and then we go and we get all the presents and we put it under the Christmas tree together.
Oh, you're going to make me cry. This is so beautiful. Where would you ever have a relationship? Like, who would that? That's so beautiful. Do people's parents, did her parents come? Do you get to know the families of these people? What's that like?
Some of them do have family that come there and they love that their kids are there because they've seen them in other environments.
Yeah.
So for them, it's like a blessing to come to a place where they don't have to go around and be worried all the time.
Yeah.
And we invite them to also be there for any of the holidays. So if they want to come, they can just come by.
Do you get to know those people?
Some of them I get to know better than others.
Yeah, but
but for example, you know, the Down syndrome girl and her sister I got to know very well.
Mm-hmm.
She is dead now, but she was someone that, she would celebrate Christmas with us sometimes. And she was almost a little bit part of the family.
So was there ever, I know you had that incident with the guy, with the guy showing you his penis or touching it, whatever.
Right.
And that's obviously unpleasant or whatever, not a positive, that's not positive really. But was there ever anyone, like as a kid, was there ever anyone that you were like, "Oh, man, I wish they'd get rid of this guy"?
I mean, yes, of course, I had my favorites. Like everyone in any family, you have your favorites. And so there was some that...
What kinds of things would... Because I mean, it's hard for a child.
Yeah.
Could be.
Well, let me think just for a second here, because you're asking me if there was someone that especially was annoying.
Yeah, no, take your time. Take your time.
We had a couple of them that were really grumpy. And I were not very, like, it was just in their nature. They were always grumpy and older, and they would shout at me as a kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I thought that he was the most annoying one ever. He also had a thing with, and this is a word that I don't know in English, where you have a wooden piece of wood and you have to make it more smooth. What is it called?
Like sanding.
Tool? Oh, sanding?
Yeah. So he used that thing on his teeth. and that was one of his...
That's horrible.
That was one of his things. And that was just...
It was a compulsion.
Yeah.
Sanding his teeth down. That's interesting.
And it was really annoying because, you know, a grumpy old man using that tool on his teeth, making those sounds... I wanted to get rid of him.
Yeah. Did you ever complain about him?
Yeah, I mean, I complained all the time.
Say?
It's not that, even though we're now highlighting all the positive parts of growing up like that, of course, there were days when I was just fucking tired of living in that kind of situation because I wanted a traditional family going on holidays and stuff like that. We never did that.
You never went on a vacation?
Well,
you couldn't take time off?
No, my parents were totally dedicated for quite some time. And then we would go like for a week or something somewhere, but that would be it.
I was going to ask you about that next, actually. I was wondering about that. If you felt as a child, like how this would, I mean, I'm just curious how it affected you as a child, because I was wondering if you ever felt like you had to share your parents with all these non-family members and stuff like that. How was that?
Me and my sister, we've been talking about it after we grew up. And we never really had like any anger towards parents or my parents while we were growing up. It was more those situations where we wanted to go on holidays or just... go and visit other families for Christmas, for example, or other like New Year's Eve, something like it was more clusters of situations. It wasn't something like ongoing. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much just, yeah.
But did you ever feel like, oh, they like that patient better than me, or that patient is getting like to do this and with my parents and I'm not?
Nah. No, wow. I would say that they were very good with how they treated me and my sister.
Wow.
So we were allowed to do a lot of things that I'm not going to share here as well.
What does that mean?
No, it was also like those things as a kid where we would build a little hut up in the trees, you know, and then we would take this small piece and we would throw them at the patients. You know, those kind of things.
So you.
It's not okay to say that out in public, but
I love it. Oh, God. Thank God. You're a fucking human, man.
Right.
Really? So you could play games on them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
We did that. We also played hide and seek. And then, you know, me and my cousin, especially, we would ask someone who was schizophrenia to count to 100. And then we would stand directly behind their back. So when they were done, we would start talking to them and saying things like, we're here, we're here. That was maybe the most evil thing that I ever did.
Wait. Do you get that, Megan? I didn't get that.
I know. It was almost like...
Megan, you explain it. What happened?
A translation. I mean, he means that, you know, they say we're going to play hide and seek. And they'd make the person count. And then when they open their eyes, that Rolf would be directly behind their shoulder whispering, we're here, I'm here, da-da-da.
Oh, to make them paranoid?
Them. Yes, yes.
Oh, paranoid schizophrenics. How'd they react? Did it get them?
No, they love to play with us. So this was just an act that we, in retrospective, have been understanding that that's really not okay. But as a kid, we didn't know that this was something bad. But, you know, we now talk and have fun with all the stories. And then we're like, Jesus Christ, that's really not good.
What I love is the way that you were able to kind of internalize their personalities and what their deficits were without having to really be told or also like the way that you saw their their quirks as you kind of normalized them by doing that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Which that's... is so interesting.
Well, yeah, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that you are interested in the story.
Yeah. Are you? So do you feel like kind of grateful that you were brought up that way? You feel like you were really, that was a privilege in a
way? Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you think her mother feels that way?
About her?
Well, she had the same experience that you did.
Yeah, I mean, it was even more wild back then when she grew up on the farm because then it was a more aggressive patients and they didn't have any kind of medication because, you know, now still, even though they grow up on the farm and they get treatment through their small assignments, they still get balanced with a little bit of medicine.
Right.
But so when my mom grew up, it was just no medicine and some of the patients were really crazy.
What would you hear? Oh, I went, come on.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to remember just so I can share something that's interesting.
do you think it was scary for her?
No, it was similar to my own experience that it was such a just an integrated part of growing up that it wasn't scary. It was just an everyday thing. But I remember my grandfather told me that he had to, because back then it was allowed to, you know, sometimes they had to put the patients in their room and then just lock the door because they were so aggressive. There were no other way to kind of calm them down. Of course, nowadays you can't do that. But then this is 50 years back.
Yeah, very. So how did your whole family get started in this crazy business?
So if... there is a public mental hospital where my family has its farm. A little bit more than 100 years ago, that was overcrowded with patients. So they had to put patients out somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Then they asked my family's farm or my grand-granddad if
your
they...
Your great-grandfather had like a regular farm with animals.
Yeah, exactly. So they were asking if he could for some time just have a few patients staying at the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Then after, you know, a few years, they saw that it was actually efficient, that it had some therapeutic. How do you say that? Therapeutic.
Well done.
Thank you, Megan.
You're welcome.
effects. And so that's how it all started with this kind of green caring and green therapy.
So it started without any real professionals or any kind of like scientific medical.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then how did it now it's like probably a certified medical facility, right? In some way.
Licenses. I mean, it's
and you have doctors and nurses.
Go through
and
a
stuff.
Lot
so
of
what
you
who went through that? Was that your grandparents or your?
Well, it's been, you know, going through phases where in the beginning there was one bedroom could be shared by 6 patients, you know, and nowadays everyone is going to have their own bedroom. And then you have medicine courses that everyone needs to take to be qualified to give out medicine. You need to have nurses, you need to have facilities. So it's always something new to make sure.
But somebody in your family must have made that decision that like this... Like we're all in on this.
Yeah,
this is not going to be just like a dairy farm. We're into like doing this. And so, how do you think that happened?
I think that totally just evolved. I don't think there was like one moment when someone said we're just going to go all in.
You think it just happened over time?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Megan, have you heard these? You haven't heard these stories.
No, I know about the situation, but I've never heard anything in detail.
This is really fascinating. I'm like thinking about, wow, I wonder if there's anything that I haven't covered. What do you think? Here's what I want to know. I want to hear Rolf. I asked you a question that I answered.
Yeah, I love it.
So anyway, Rolf, here's what I want to know. I want to know, because I'm so filled with the experience and I'm like, it's really emotional. It's really making me feel compassion. Like I've had, you know, I've had my mental problems, for God's sakes. My father, actually, to be honest, was hospitalized with depression a couple of times. So I seen it up close. And this compassion for people and like what human beings are capable under the like the right circumstances is really, really, really moving. So I'm just kind of filled with that right now. But I was wondering, we've got 10 minutes left. If you could help us understand, if you can, all that, whatever that is that you got from growing up that way and how that translates into what you're, who you are now, what you're doing with your project today. Can you give us a little, like, where you're thinking about what you do now, how's come out of that?
So I think it is a combination of me growing up at the farm and being exposed to the normal, unnormal situation and having more of a definition of that, which is that we're all similar. You need to see the person in front of you and not any kind of labor label. So, you know, the combination of that and also exposing myself to environments where... or also to expose myself to work that demands that I'm curious and listening and interested in individuals and people. That combination is what is my strength and what is now manifesting in quoted.
Do you think that there's something inherently fascinating about these people who are mental patients and you're kind of looking for that out in the world and other people?
Well, I sometimes think that we all want to be listened to. And especially if we're talking about New York, because everyone wants to tell their story and want to try and compete with who has the best story. So if you sit down here and you're actually listening, not just hearing, but listening, then... I think you can help anyone to become a better person, both mentally, be more present or be more satisfied.
So you want to help people. Do you ever feel guilty about not being on the farm that you're like, I mean, you are doing a lot of great work. I mean, there's no question about it. But do you ever feel like that, what you're doing, you still have a real drive to help people.
Oh, yeah,
which
definitely.
You did on the farm.
Yeah.
But do you ever feel like, is there something about that? I'm wondering if maybe you're missing some of that or you long for that feeling.
Well,
did you have a real feeling of purpose being on the farm with those people?
Yeah, and that's also why I go back, you know, every half year. Uh-huh. I go back there and I even, you know, I help my sister out now when I go back because I need to go to that environment to get grounded and be reminded of where I come from. So yes, it does. I sometimes miss it, and I also miss the, I don't know, like it's something about caring and helping people in that way, which is so, it has a direct consequence of being there.
Right.
You know, when you help people out in the urban development cities, then it's not as direct how you help them.
Right. And also, there was something I was going to say, which is that, what was I going to say? I had this thought that, you know, it's really interesting. Authenticity is what I was going to say. So, like, mentally ill people in a certain way are authentically interesting. They're interesting by their their authenticity, but they're not like we are. I am. Trying to be interesting or trying to find something interesting or trying to develop what's interesting about me. They're like interesting without the reward of what it is to be interesting. So I think that's a really, really, really awesome experience that you had. And I love you for sharing it. I'm feeling really like emotional. How about you, Megan?
Yeah, it's definitely emotional. Yeah.
It's like, don't you feel like, wow, that's crazy. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have to wrap this up because I got to play the song. We only have a few minutes, but I just want to remind people about how great this magazine is, and that they should go to quotedmagazine.com. or on social media. They can go to @quoted_magazine. And I think this is really, really, really interesting. And I think it is really important work. And I encourage you guys to check this out. I found the magazine. You can see the actual print magazine online. You can also order your own copy. It's $20, but you're really buying like a coffee table book. I know for some of you, that's $20 you could give to the radio station. I know. But no, it's good. It's all good. It's all part of the same thing.
Spend $40 today.
Yes, yeah, spend right? $40. I better acknowledge my husband because you know what my husband did for Valentine's Day? My husband, the procrastinator, shout out, love you, Phil. So this is what Phil did. Phil knew that I was going to be on the radio station today. So he actually, we have two staircases that lead to the floor that we live on. And he actually went up the one that he doesn't usually use with flowers because he knew he was late. And he wanted to make sure that he ran into me before I came on the air and that he gave me flowers so that I could give him a shout out for the flowers on the air.
Yes.
What a guy.
Love you, Phil. Love you. So I'm going to play the song. I just want to say thanks again to everybody for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm at Dr. Lisa Levy SP on Instagram. And I want to play the song from Gift Shop, their new EP release, Big Astoria. The party is going to be at Coney Island Baby, 169 Avenue A, 8 p.m. Tickets are $10 at the door. And this is a song from their album that's going to be released tomorrow called We Want. And I'm going to see if I can make the technology work. Let's hope. Let's see if we can do it. Is that doing it? Let's see. No? This is not doing it. Well, you know what, folks? I'm just going to say it is really great. I've heard it. I want you to listen to it. I will post it. But the thing is that our internet is out here at the station today. The one fucking day, kids, it's out. So there you have it. Anyway, stick around. I want to tell you who's coming on right after this. It's Elon Danziger. This is such a special day on Radio Free Brooklyn because we got Elon, and that's 4 to 5, and then he's 3 to 4, and then he's followed by Brooklyn Bandstand, which is our local music shows and music, and that's with Rob Pritchard. And then, you know, we've also got the station director, Tom Tenney, who plays, I'm going to try and, oh my God, I'm going to blank out on what his show, the name of his show is, because he's the station director and I'm kind of afraid of him. That's what's going to happen. Anyway, I just want to say thanks again to you guys for
coming in today. Thank you for having us. Yeah.
So we've got 1 minute left. Megan, what do you think? How's this going for the brand?
Oh, it's been great.
You think?
I think so. We've seen a whole new side of Rolf that we haven't seen before.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I think it's going to, like, it's kind of like the story behind
the
brand
a little
bit. I was just
going to say, it gives some context.
Right?
It's like the origin story.
And the brand is actually so beautiful and professional. It's nice to see that there's some really, I don't want to say dark, but there's some kind of mix. Craziness behind it, crazy disorganization and disorganized minds that are baked into there.
Yeah, they're baked in.
They are.
And they're baked into Rolf.
Yeah, they're all processed through me.
Yes, he's the spokesperson.
Yeah, because he's so, he's, he, he,